And we're back with episode 29 of the Collaborative Business Podcast.
Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Today, my guest is Dave Luverson, an alliance expert for a long time and building upon 20 years of being a practitioner followed by 12 years of being an academic and consultant promises altogether more than enough room for a great conversation. So without further ado, let's welcome Dave to the Collaborative Business Podcast. Dave, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. It is great to have you. After all those times that we've spoken live, now we... Well, more or less live. You and I, we're live, but for the listeners, we're not actually live at the moment they hear this. But it's good to have you on the conversation, and I look forward to dive into some topics about alliances. But before we do, can you introduce yourself to the listeners? Who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'd be happy to. Thank you. My name is Dave Luverson. I'm actually a professor at DeVry University here in the United States. I live outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. And my academic interests are in the area of strategic alliances and particularly how alliances are influenced by organizational behavior factors, team behaviors, personality, psychology, psychological orientations, those sorts of things. Prior to being in academia for the last roughly 12 years, I was actually a practitioner in for a good 20 years in the area of channels and then primarily in alliances. I started out in the high-tech industry. And that's where I got my first taste of sort of collaborating, working through partners as opposed to, say, selling directly to customers. And I was responsible for creating our organization's essentially partner programs. And we were pretty successful with it. We were able to get our partner network up to about 1,800 partners within about 2 years. Which was pretty significant, I thought. And I was accountable and responsible for developing that program, for managing that program, and then for turning it over once I moved on to some other things. And from that sort of programmatic start, I then moved more into specific alliances and then was either involved in directly managing alliances or in setting up, again, programs for groups of people that within my organizations that were responsible for managing those alliances. And then that took me up to, as I said, about 12 years ago. And then I made a life decision that I wanted to get into teaching. I really enjoyed lecturing and enjoyed conducting workshops and those sorts of things. So I carried my interest and background in alliances, and my doctoral work was in the area of alliances. The research that I do is in the area of alliances. The consulting that I've done is in the area of alliances. While I'm not a current practitioner, I hope your listeners won't hold that against me. I've got a fair amount of experience direct up until, as I say, about 12 years ago, and then through my ongoing consulting, pretty good touch with it since.
Okay, thank you for the interesting introduction and the interesting background you're sketching. I already hear a lot of questions coming up based on your introduction.
Excellent.
I think you have a great combination of practice and now more studying the theory and bringing it into practice also through your consulting and deepening the skills and the knowledge we know about strategic alliances.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I very much look forward to ask you the question, what is for you a strategic alliance?
Ah, well, that's a good question. I think everybody has their own little sense of what it is. What I've actually come to as my definition of it is as follows. And the first part of it is relatively straightforward. It's a collaboration between two or more organizations. It has some level of tight operative connections. In other words, operationally, the two parties or more two or more parties need to work together very closely. Usually, there's some sort of formal agreement that is responsible for holding things together. And that's I wouldn't say that's necessarily the standard definition, but I think that's relatively common. The thing that I've come to find in my background and also is, you know, sort of my research interests have taken me there is one additional piece, and that is that in alliances, both parties that are involved need to change a fundamental aspect of either a product, a process, or a service. And let me try to explain why I think that's important. You know, if we think about what most companies do in terms of selling directly to customers, they offer a product, and if it's a product the customer likes, that's great. And if it's a product they don't like, the customer isn't ready to have, the customer either goes to a competitor or perhaps the selling company can make some modifications. But typically, it's kind of looking for people that have a need for what you're selling. If you think about channels, usually we talk about it as a one-to-many sort of relationship, and the company, the vendor company in that particular case, has a product and a way of delivering that product and a partner network, but they basically make that network work for everybody. So the idea of a channel is they can take product and drive it through a variety of different channels, and ultimately the partners adapt, but the primary vendor has pretty much standardized things and for all intents and purposes is optimizing what they do. They get some efficiencies and economies of scale by doing that. The thing about alliances that's always fascinated me, and I think what makes them so difficult, is that usually in alliances, both sides are trying to adapt to the other in order to meet the needs of a market. Mm-hmm. And consequently, both sides are having to make changes. Either they have to adapt their products, or they have to change the way they process something, or the way they bill something, or the way that they're planning to deliver or coordinate their services, and certainly I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Peter. But you know there's such difficulty in making alliances work successfully. I think a big contributor to that is the fact that the organizations that are involved in alliances have fundamentally agreed to break something about their own organization, and as a result of breaking it, they're not only trying to work together, but they're trying to get their organizations to deal with the breaking, deal with the breakage, so to speak. And that's what makes it so hard, not just coordinating with the partner, but also trying to figure out how you can get your organization to adapt to everything. So that's what I've been using for my career as kind of an operating definition of alliances.
Okay, thank you. And you make an interesting distinction between channel and alliances.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we see often that when you talk to people about alliances, they feel that the whole wide area of everything between a transaction and basically a merger and acquisition is an alliance.
Yeah.
Now, it can be seen as all in the same alliance space, alliance spectrum. But there is a clear distinction, and thank you for highlighting that one between the channel and the alliance.
I'm glad you see that. I think some of that stems from my, if you will, behavioral orientation to alliances. Because when I think about what goes on in an alliance, I think less about it from the standpoint of maybe, say, a contractual relationship, although that's certainly important, and more from the perspective of what's occurring within the individual organizations, and this idea of whether both organizations have to change or one organization has to change, I think is kind of an important difference, because I think it shades what can potentially happen in the alliance. You know, alliances, as you know, are often compared to marriage and, you know, two people living together. And, you have the same sort of things. If one party in the relationship doesn't want to change and the other has to change, that puts a unique strain on it. But really, kind of having a long, sustained relationship with a partner means that both are having to adapt to one another and both are sort of maturing, changing, and growing over time. And there was that aspect of change and the difficulty the organization has to do it that at least, you know, I don't mean to impose my definition on others, but at least was was important for me.
And the example you mentioned, where you worked with, in the end, 1,800 partners, that was a channel organization?
You know, it, fundamentally, like so many other companies in the high-tech field, we called it a partner program. There was a kind of at the tip of that pyramid, there were some very large and significant partners with whom our relationships are really alliance-like. There was a fair amount of adaptation on both sides. But for all intents and purposes, we were essentially working with either the resellers or the developers or the service providers that were somehow supporting our product. And at the end of the day, that made it, in my opinion, closer to a channel than what I now define as an alliance.
Okay. Because I can imagine that the way you define the alliance, an alliance from one partner with 1,800 partners, you can't adjust to 1,800 partners.
Exactly. No, and that's, I think, one of the, and maybe we'll get a chance to pursue this, but that is, I think, one of the interesting, not only differences in mindset between the two, but I think it's one of the potential areas of learning that companies that do alliances can begin to maybe undertake, because there are certain areas of efficiency in a partner program. You know, you tailor your access and you tailor your information flows and you tailor your products to try to facilitate others using it. But once you do that, they're common, right? You're not adapting to, as you say, rightly so, you can't adapt to 1,800 partners. And sometimes in our way we think about alliances, we sort of preclude that possibility that there are certain things, certain procedures we could standardize and recognize across the various alliances in our portfolio. Thinking that, as Mike Leonetti at ASAP likes to say, you know, if you've seen one alliance, you've seen one alliance. And well, I think he's fundamentally right. There are a lot of things about alliances that are common. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit of an opportunity to start thinking about programmatic things that maybe create a bit more standardization, which in turn could make it easier for organizations to facilitate multiple alliances, because at least they wouldn't have to be fighting the same battle multiple times for each of their partners.
Yeah, but isn't that also where we see alliance life cycles coming in, with procedures that are similar across every alliance but will be adapted to every alliance to make it specific?
I think so. We're certainly able to observe better companies that are better at alliances that do just that. And they do it, as you say, consistently across consistently per the various phases of their life cycle. And I think that's one of the things that helps them be successful. They're able to get an element of standardization where they should be standardized, and then that allows them the ability to focus on the critical differences that you just mentioned.
Okay, well, let's stay a little bit within the definition, because a couple of weeks ago you were in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And you did a presentation for, I think, about 35 people about ecosystems.
Yes.
Where does that fit into the definition? When you look at, we discussed channel, we discussed strategic alliances. Now, you can't do a strategic alliance with 1,800 partners, but it moves into the direction of an ecosystem when you have that amount of partners.
Right. Exactly. Well, I think that's a great question, and I think it's part of the sort of bigger picture that alliances and collaboration is actually tending toward. You know, one of the things, I will actually answer your question, but allow me a brief sideline for a moment here. One of the things that I've really been very interested in over the course of the last few years has been the area of culture and company cultures and how those cultures are supportive of alliances or not supportive of alliances. And we know, and I've had the opportunity to do some work with Ard Peter Dumont, and we've published a couple things on this, that that there are some characteristics of organizations that lend themselves more toward working collaboratively with other organizations than others. So a sense of trustworthiness and mutuality and responsiveness and those types of things represent cultural values that allow you to do this. Now, more back to your point then about sort of where does sort of the ecosystem fit in all this. You know, I think that when we have traditionally, many people have looked at alliances, and particularly a lot of alliance managers, and I felt I did this when I was an alliance manager. There was an extreme amount of focus on the individual relationship, and very often the alliance manager was actively and deeply involved in trying to manage all of the points of interaction and manage all of the potential conflicts and manage all of the individual differences. And that requires a pretty sophisticated skill set on the part of the alliance manager. And I think most alliance managers actually have that. But as you indicated, it becomes increasingly impractical to try to scale that up. So I think, you know, when I was talking about ecosystems and kind of where they might fit in this continuum going from a dyadic alliance to a, let's say, out toward an ecosystem. I think one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize was that it's nearly impossible to manage the ecosystem. You can manage immediate pieces of it, and I think you have some level of control over some parts of it, but you don't have much control over the entire ecosystem, because truly an ecosystem is everything, including competitors and the customer and all that. So the message was, well, if we really can't manage it, you know, we might be able to manage parts of it like an alliance, but if we really can't manage it, what does that mean? We have to think more in terms of how we set conditions in place. So those conditions start to become kind of important. And I think in a sense, you know, some of the lessons that we can learn from, say, partner program, channel type programs, about how do we do things that make it easier just in general for other companies to work with us, create this opportunity to influence what's going on in the ecosystem. In other words, you may recall from that presentation that I tried to stress two things. One of them was that you can try to manage an ecosystem by being at least selective about the kinds of partners that you invite into it, and that in some way shapes its character. And the other thing you can do is try to put conditions in place that make it easier for that ecosystem to operate. And I think in some ways that's what we see companies trying to do with their partner programs, and I think we're going to start to see more and more kind of alliance-oriented organizations having to do that if they're going to try to manage across their portfolio or manage into the ecosystem. And that is starting to think about not how they adapt to individual differences for each partner, but how they put cultural orientations in place within their own companies so that they can manage better. I'm sorry if you feel I'm being too abstract. I'm not trying to be. I'm really trying to answer it at a rather, if you will, kind of a rather broad conceptual level, and I'm happy to kind of dive into it a little more. But hopefully it's not too abstract at this point.
No, it's not. There is a nice distinction now between a channel, an alliance, and an ecosystem. And we're more or less a little bit skipping the standard questions we always have in the interview, but that's fine, because I think it's a very interesting topic, like we're discussing. Now, you are 20 plus years of experience as a practitioner, then 12 years in academics and consulting. Mm-hmm. Do you see a development over that time that alliances are getting more important, that collaboration between organizations is getting more important, or What kind of development do you see in the market when it comes to collaboration between businesses?
That's a great question, and it forces me, although you're forcing an old man to remember back 30 years, so that's that's always dangerous, right? That what I tell you may be what I think rather than what really occurred, but I'll be as accurate as I can.
Then
no, I'm just kidding.
I know. Otherwise, I would rephrase the question to the past 12 years of academics. But
No. Yeah, really, just ask me to remember what I had for breakfast, and that's sometimes a challenge. It's a very good question. You know, when I first started doing this, I think the concept of collaborating was something that most organizations not only didn't understand, but I think it was felt to be maybe just even awkward for the organization, or maybe a better way of saying that is, my experience was that organizations really felt reticent to truly collaborate. And I say this coming in from the perspective of an organization that had distribution channels and, you know, wanted to set up a partner program, but the idea of why they were doing it was really just thinking why they wanted to do alliances was sort of an outgrowth of channels. Well, you know, if we focus on some of these partners better, they may sell more and we'll do better. And I think there was a sense of an honest sense, and I say this with a high degree of respect for the people that I was working for at the time, almost a sense of cluelessness about what it involved. They sort of perceived that there was a potential for synergy if they could work more closely, if they could, as we like to say, collaborate. But I think they weren't entirely sure why. And what I think has occurred over the last, you know, over that period of time, and certainly seemed to kick in about 10, 12, maybe even 15 years ago, was this idea that alliances were good strategy. There was finally enough precedent, not just in the high-tech field, but we saw it in the pharmaceutical industry. We started to see it in manufacturing and other industries, that there was enough precedent to actually suggest that alliances were good strategy. And in my mind, maybe one of the best barometers of this occurred a couple years ago in one of IBM's annual CEO studies, where the CEOs that they interviewed, and they interviewed 1,000 or 1,500 or something CEOs, about 70% of them said that that collaboration and partnering were critically important for the organization. So I think we're at a stage now, and from my perception and as I've watched it evolve, I think we're at a stage now where executives and organizations in general see the strategic benefit of alliances. And as a result, it's become a necessary and a deliberate strategy. The one thing I think that is still somewhat missing is, while many of the leaders of these organizations and many of the key people in these organizations understand the strategic value, I'm still finding that there's a failure to totally comprehend the operational challenges that they're getting themselves into. In other words, that they're suggesting that, you know, alliances are good and we need to do alliances and we know why we want to do alliances and we can understand the synergies that we'll create, but they're not automatically translating that into the kind of operational and cultural, if you will, changes that need to occur in their organization to be successful at it. So there's still this, in my mind, fundamentally important disconnect that's occurring, but it's clearly matured along the strategy lines quite a bit, and I think that there's just tons of factors that are going to encourage increased collaboration, whether we call it alliances or whatever it morphs into in the future. I think that is clearly a pattern's been set there, and I think we're just seeing it increasing. The question will now be if we can see similar growth and maturity in terms of how they're managed.
Well, and you're working towards my next question. So, when you look at it from your research in behavior and cultural aspects of organizations, what should they change? What should they do to make their alliance successful?
I think it's a very important question, and particularly from the perspective of alliance managers, I think it ultimately will represent the difference between whether they're just working very hard or working very hard and going crazy doing it. Because I think what there's a number of things we understand about behavior and about attribution and about culture that actually suggests that most organizations aren't necessarily set up to collaborate. For instance, we know from what's called social identity theory and how teams operate that they tend to be very cohesive among themselves, but other groups, teams, are naturally sort of the competitor. Even within an organization, you've probably heard the same kinds of stories I have where people complain about, you know, cross-functional conflict in organizations or the silos within organizations and how they fail to maybe work together. And if you're a salesperson, you distrust the legal people because their involvement in contract writing makes it difficult for you to sell those kinds of things.
Their job is to kill your sale, isn't it?
And that's it. You know, what are order prevention systems, I think is what they often refer to. That's right. So, you know, we know that behaviorally, and that's a fundamental process. But if you're, and again, nothing against executives, but if you're an executive in the organization, you know, it's not surprising if you have this sense that everyone in the organization is going to pull together. And that, I think, behaviorally, we see that's a problem. And that's a challenge, and you have to work at that. I think the other thing that, you know, the similar sorts of things we need to think about is in terms of, you know, sort of the cultural orientation of many organizations. I've long said, and really from my just research into not just culture literature, but actually investigating this and doing studies on this. One of the things that's kind of interesting is that cultures form for a number of reasons, but they form and evolve over time to make the organization successful. But if the organization has traditionally not embraced the mindset of collaborating, in other words, it's worked internally, it's tried to work internally effectively, those processes have evolved to make it effective internally, but they aren't necessarily open to working with partners. They're not necessarily open to the kinds of behavioral changes you have to build trust with a partner or to share information or communicate effectively with a partner or learn how to make decisions with others. And so I think what, you know, where this starts to go is that if organizations are going to begin to be successful in alliances, and at the same time try to be more effective and efficient at doing it, then some of the cultural changes they have to consider are talking about partnerships from more than just a strategic perspective, but also talking about it from the perspective of mutual solidarity, how they're really, you know, embracing the ideas of one another and really supporting the ideas of one another. There's a big difference between partnering because you feel it's going to get you something and partnering with the intention that you want the partner to get something because you realize that will ultimately be the only way you get it. And that's a cultural change. Some of that can be accomplished, and we're finding in some studies we did in companies, some of that can be accomplished simply by how executives talk about alliances. More frequent discussion about alliances and more frequent focus on some of the behavioral aspects of it begin to get picked up by others in the organization, and that makes the others more acceptable to alliance behavior. Similar sorts of things occur in terms of how processes are engineered. A lot of processes within organizations are highly efficient, but they're highly efficient to operate them in conjunction with all the things the organization needs to do. When those processes dovetail against a partner's processes, we start to see the issues, and we start to see the differences and the gaps. And unless you're willing to be flexible about some of your processes and be willing to re-engineer at least the interfaces to those processes, it becomes very difficult. So, you know, again, I think I'm answering your question. Please feel free to take me back if I got a bit off track. But I think, you know, if you go back to what the Alliance Manager has done in the past, the Alliance Manager has been that interface. You know, an Alliance Manager can only be stretched so far, and maybe they can be extremely effective in one or two alliances, but as this starts to expand into a portfolio or as this starts to expand into an ecosystem, there's no way they can deal with all of those things they have to deal with. And if the organization doesn't become more of a alliance supportive, as Art Peter and I like to call it, there's going to be difficulty in terms of getting it to that next level.
Well, it's very interesting, and I have a lot of more questions. But given our time, I would like to focus on the final questions.
Okay.
So we more or less had it already about the. Let's take that one. So when you look at companies who are new to alliances,
mm-hmm.
what will be your number one recommendation for them to enter into an alliance, and why?
When a company is new to alliances, assuming that, you know, I would have that opportunity to talk to them at the outset of doing that, I think the first thing they want to I'm going to take this back to sort of Alliance 101, and that is, I think they need to be very conscious of the value. And you know, as we talk about at ASAP, alliances have this three-way value proposition, right? You know, the alliance should benefit you, it should benefit your partner, but it should also benefit a potential customer. And if those three points of value aren't there, then the alliance is going to start out on shaky ground. So I think that the first thing I would suggest to anybody that's sort of new to alliances is not to get so caught up in terms of what you expect to get out of it, but to be able to equally articulate what the customer is going to get out of this and what your partner is going to get out of it. And if you can do that, and you know, we're really talking about a number of things that should be done, but I think as a starting point, if you can do that, it sort of pulls you back to this understanding that the alliance is about two or more organizations that have to really be responsive to one another. And if one of their expectations is not met, then they will quickly lose interest or they will respond in a negative way. And in doing so, they'll immediately start to tear the alliance down. I've even done exercises with companies that are relatively new to alliances, or they're trying to go through some sort of a transition in their understanding of alliances. And I've asked them to, and this would really be something that I think any listener on this video, on this tape could, recording rather, could do. And that is to actually articulate the objectives and success criteria and timelines and concerns that the partner has, and be able to deliver those, be able to state those as compellingly as the partner would. And I think if they can begin to do that, as they're looking at their first alliance, then they enter with the right perception, because now they understand what the partner needs to be satisfied. And ideally, they would then, you know, be able to go through that same exercise themselves and or with the partner, and both of them could begin to appreciate what they're really trying to get out of it, as opposed to simply going into it looking for what they're going to get for themselves. Yeah.
So step into the shoes of your partner and look it from his or her side instead of your own side.
Precisely. Yeah. And I think alliance managers do that.
Yeah.
You know, they interact so closely with their counterparts that they understand, and in some cases it puts them in an awkward position, right? They now become an advocate for the partner or the alliance, whichever way you want to look at it, and in some cases that sort of goes against what the rest of the company wants to do. But I think as long as there's that problem, then there's that inability to really be able to understand exactly what the partner needs to get out of it, you're not going to be able to come close to doing what the partner expects. And conversely, they're not going to be able to do what you expect. And I think if you can begin on that basis, then there's a lot we can do in terms of, you know, let's take some fundamental processes and, you know, let's take some of the best practices we know, because now the best practices have at least a place to anchor. That before, without that understanding, my experience is that you're throwing best practices at people that really aren't prepared to use them. Kind of like, you know, I'll give you directions on driving a car, but if you've never driven a car before and you're not familiar with the mechanics of the car, you're not familiar with how it performs and handles, you're going to probably get into an accident, even though I've given you directions and practices to follow.
Yeah, that's a nice one indeed. Okay, so is there a specific business book or book about collaboration you would like to recommend to our listeners?
That's a good question. I would be remiss if I didn't recommend my colleague Art Peter's book on alliances, not because I get anything from it, but I think he did a great job of two things. One of them is actually categorizing something that I think some alliance professionals don't really have enough familiarity with, and that is the governance model that really exist in alliances. And I think he did a great job with some really excellent case studies. That book is basically titled Alliances. It just recently came out. But I really like it because it talks about some important things. And it also talks about why alliances are governed by a combination of trust and control. And I think in some cases, alliance managers, by virtue of their own personality, tend to gravitate more toward relationship management. And that's a good thing because that's often overlooked in the organization. But I think what I liked about Ard Peter's book was that it sort of helped you see the balance, that there are certainly reasons and situations and cases where you'd need to, where you want to actually think a lot about formal controls or, you know, more what we might think of as more contractually based types of things. And I think from that standpoint, it's a good read for people. Another one that I think is good is actually almost 14 years old, but it's Robert Speckman did a book called Alliance Competence, and it was really about this idea of an alliance mindset. And I'm not sure that there's a lot that's been written about it. At least I haven't found a lot that's been written about alliance mindset. But it's written in a way that I think that leaders in organizations could see certain things that are really important about how you approach the whole idea of aligning, which is different than just the strategic decision, which actually has to do with some of the changes you might have to mentor through your organization and some of the things you might have to be conscious of. So I think that's a pretty good book too. So those are the two that I would kind of recommend off top of my head.
Okay, well, I will link to both books in the show notes. And actually, Art Peter was in episode 8, my guest, about his book. That was even before the book was available.
Wonderful.
So yeah, I've seen more people recommend the book of Art Peter, so happy you do as well.
Yeah.
So Dave, where can people find more about you?
Well, I suppose I should have a website.
Okay.
That's a good question. I'd be happy to, you're certainly welcome to provide my contact information, my email address, and my phone number, or my Skype ID, and if people want to reach out to me, I'm happy to talk to them. I actually never learned the art of self-promotion, and I think it hurt me in many cases in my career. But I lead a hermit-like academic life now, so maybe it's appropriate. I would certainly welcome anyone wanting to, you know, chat and spend time, and I'd be happy to tell them all they want to know about me at that point in time.
Okay, well, I will share your details in the show notes then.
Thank you.
Good. Is there anything we haven't discussed that you would like to share with our listeners?
No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly we could do this for a few hours, right?
I
mean,
I agree.
There's a lot we could talk about alliances. I think that maybe the one thing, if I'm allowed or entitled or not stopped from giving alliance managers advice, I think the one thing that I would suggest to them is that amid all of the effort and all the work they're doing to kind of patch together the things that are occurring in an alliance, all of which are fundamentally important to keeping that alliance going, if they can devote just a little bit of that effort at how they can chip away at some of the procedural and structural and maybe even cultural ways that their organizations think, at the end of the day, they're helping their organizations move more toward stronger collaborative capability. And it could be something as simple as taking, you know, you mentioned, for instance, the various processes and best practices that we, you know, we talk about implementing at various stages in the life cycle. Focusing on trying to create some of those, not from a standpoint of creating bureaucracy, but from the standpoint of creating processes that stand in the organization. And I think processes have an important psychological value. The fact that there are accounting or budget planning procedures or expense reporting procedures in the organizations makes those tangible to the rest of the organization. In fact, some of our cultural work would suggest that it's creating visible symbols that kind of make those fundamentally important. And I think if alliance managers can work at not just trying to make that individual alliance work better, but either taking a best practice, implementing it, standardizing it, or working to help standardize it across the organization, what they're starting to do is build a strong case for the permanence of alliance management, and starting to put a marker in the ground for procedural thinking, if you will, that the rest of the people in their organization should have. I think if they do that, it's a slow process, but if they do that, they're helping ultimately to not only bolster the profession, but I think to actually start to modify the culture of their organization so that it can be more collaborative and so that the next alliance is slightly easier, the one after that is slightly easier. And ultimately, you know, as they start thinking about setting conditions and ecosystems and things like that, they can do a lot better. So you can take that with a grain of salt, even cut it if you didn't think it was right. But that's the advice I would tend to leave with most alliance managers. Step back a little bit and think programmatically, even just with 5% of your time. And I think ultimately it'll start to pay benefit.
I think that's an excellent closing advice, Dave. Thank you very much for being my guest.
It was a pleasure being asked, and I enjoyed talking with you again, as I always do. And keep on doing this. This is an excellent series, and I'm flattered to be a part of it.
So far for the conversation with Dave Loevesen. The show notes, as usual, can be found at simons.com/episode29. We'll be back next week with a new episode. In the meantime, do remember to leave an iTunes review. It will help us in the ratings and recognition for this podcast. Until next week, bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.